The following podcast is brought to you by Newfie EVP, Talking with the Dead in Newfoundland. Jump on Amazon.ca today and get your free sample of the best-selling ebook in Unexplained Mysteries.
Hey guys, this is your host John Mallard. Just wanted to say a very happy anniversary to me and to you, my listeners. I think it's very important that you know just how much it means to me, that not for a second do you guys ever stop believing in me. Enjoy the show.
This is Garnet Schulzer, author of Dancing on a Stamp and Dancing Forever with Spirit, and I'd like to wish a happy first anniversary to Odd to Newfoundland Paranormal Podcast.
Hi, Melissa Martin Ellis here, author of the Everything Ghost Hunting book. I'd like to wish Odd to Newfoundland a very happy first anniversary. Congratulations on a year of great shows.
Research Society. Just want to wish Odd to Newfoundland a very happy anniversary. Stay safe and happy hunting.
This is Carissa Flack, psychic medium, wishing you a happy anniversary.
Hello, it's Jim Mallard from The Mallard Report, the fastest hour in paranormal talk radio. To find out more about my program, you can visit italkparanormal.com, but that's not why I'm here. I'm here to congratulate my buddy John. I know, Mallard, different spelling. On his first year of podcasting, and it's tough, and if you know, it's a struggle for people at times. So to get through that first year is wonderful. To do the shows that he's done is remarkable. I wish him continued success, and I hope to be doing this again next year for the second year. That's all I really have to say. All the best, John. Thank you for your friendship and for all the help that you've given me. And I know you feel that I've given you more than you've given me, but that's here or there. So, to the Odds of Newfoundland podcast, congratulations and continued success.
It's the Odds to Newfoundland. Ghostly greetings from your host, Jonathan. Mysteries, ghosts, monsters, and lore. East Coast esoterica, and so much more. If it's up to you, friend, it's on the up to Newfoundland.
Ghostly greetings from the oldest city in North America. I'm your host, John Mallard, bringing you the best East Coast esoterica. You, my friends, have stumbled upon the Odd to Newfoundland Paranormal Podcast for the month of July. 2015, July is here. You know what that means? It means that this little old podcast is 1 year old. It was exactly a year ago that I sat down in a cabin in Holyrood, next to a cabin that's haunted, by the way, but the one I was in isn't, and I took a recorder and I recorded my first show. And I had a couple of reasons for doing it. Number one, I felt it would be a good idea to inspire and as well as talk to people in the field. Might be a great way to, how shall we say, schmooze with the big wigs out there. But I think the number one reason I did it is really paranormal. You know, being involved with it, whether you're in the Bigfoot or spirits or God knows what, I'm going to say this to you, man. It is a lonely, lonely field. I have lost friends. I have lost people who I care about because they think I'm a kook. But you know what? That's okay. As long as I got you guys out there listening to my show, I'm very, very happy. Let me just say happy anniversary to everyone out there who's listening to me right now and to anybody who ever will. Thank you so much for giving me a reason to keep doing what I'm doing. As you can tell, earlier, a few minutes ago, I actually had a lot of my former guests wish me a happy anniversary, because yes, I am John Mallard, the Odd to Newfoundland. It was so great to have an excuse to talk to all those people again on Facebook. It was just really great to hear them. And everyone's so busy, so like, randomly, I'd be at my new job, and then suddenly I hear like an audio clip and it'd be just like, happy anniversary. And everyone's like, oh, it's your, you and your wife's anniversary. I was like, nah, that was a few months ago. And then I'm like scratching my head, thinking back in my mind, wait, I hope I never actually forgot our anniversary because I'd be in a big pile of trouble. I just got back from my little girl's first ballet recital, and oh man, did she ever have a great time. She's 4 years old, she's going to be 5 in August, and my little girl still listens to this show from time to time with me. She loves it, especially all the guests, she likes to say, who have funny accents. So, it's always interesting to have somebody on the show who's new, and this guy who's coming on a little later in the show, Garnett Schulhauser, has a very wonderful accent, but what's even better than his accent? It's his story. I decided, you know what? It's our 1 year anniversary. Happy New Year. We're going to have fireworks. And what I mean by that is that we're actually going to have something very, very bright and happy and positive. I think we need that so I can reinvigorate myself to keep on trucking and keep bringing you guys this podcast every single month. Garnett is a wonderful guest. I can't wait to have him on later, man. And if you need a good dose of positive energy, wait till you meet a lawyer who's got a spirit guide. Now, I know I've been working my butt off lately, trying to lose a few pounds. I'm actually quite proud of myself. I lost 12 pounds this month. I started a new diet plan and stuff, so I'm really proud of myself. But you know what? Every now and then, I get a hankering for something good. Which brings me to this month's very special anniversary edition of the Paranormal News. Every now and then, I really, really want a treat on this diet, let me tell you. And I would love to have a nice latte or something. Well, imagine you can literally live up to the expectation of that old phrase, you are what you eat. Because right now there's a gadget that puts your face on a coffee. Images can be printed in just 10 seconds using coffee extract stored in called ripple pods. A 3D printing inspired machine that can create any image on the foam of a cup of coffee has been unveiled. The Ripple Maker combines inkjet and 3D printing mechanics to replicate any image onto your frothy beverage. The image can be reprinted in just 10 seconds using coffee extract stored in so-called Ripple Pods. Customers can download an app to send their own photos to the machine, which will then create it on top of the drink. With a price tag of close on $1,000, it might seem pricey, but for a gadget that will see a coffee shop's products rapidly snapped and posted on Instagram, it could prove to be a good publicity opportunity. As well as the upfront cost, there is also a $75 monthly subscription fee. So here's my plan. I am going to get me one of these, and I am going to get them to 3D print me a nice coffee frothy mug of, oh, I don't know, maybe, Demi Moore's classic. But I think my all-time biggest crush is probably Marilyn Monroe. So I want to see Marilyn's face on my coffee. You want to know why? Because it's definitely the closest I'm ever going to come to putting my lips on hers. Well, I hope I haven't got you all hot and bothered out there. Because let me tell you, in Japan, they're swooning over a hunky, gorgeous, muscular, sensitive nature gorilla. Yeah, it's right. There's a Romeo in the treetops. Yeah, now before you shoot me down, I know as well as you that gorillas don't climb a whole lot of trees. Well, women are apparently flocking to a Japanese zoo to admire a giant gorilla with brooding good looks and a sensitive nature. Oh my god. Oh, there's just some stories that are just great to talk about. A giant gorilla who strikes poses for photos has been described as very good looking and is being credited for attracting more women to a Japanese zoo. Shibani, an 18-year-old silverback, has been compared to a male model and has become a star attraction at the Hagashima Zoo in Nagoya. The ape, who weighs in at close to 400 pounds, has been variously described as having brooding good looks, rippling muscles, and being very attractive. Women are apparently so smitten by his looks that they've taken to social media to swoon and, according to the zoo, are flocking to his pen to take a peek. He often rests his chin on his hands and looks intently at you, zoo spokesman Tatsuyuma Ishikawa told the AFP news agency. He is more buff than most gorillas, and he's at his peak physically. We've seen a rise in the number of female visitors. Women say he's very good looking. Now, Shibani, who has been at the zoo since 2007, shot to fame after being made the campaign model for the zoo's spring festival earlier this year. Mr. Ishikawa says the ape's paternal skills are also a big hit with women. He's a father, and he always protects and looks over his children, he said. Zoogoers think his kindness is attractive, too. Women have posted comments on social media describing him as Eichmann or a hunk and likening him to a male model. Wow. A recent flurry of tweets has made Shibani a national celebrity with Japan's broadcasters NHK and NHTV featuring the girl on a popular show. He will look you in the eye, and sometimes if you're taking photos, it will look like he's posing for you like a like a model, said Mr. Ishikawa. But he's the head of a group of five gorillas, so it's likely he's just watching out for them and keeping an eye on you. Now, in my opinion, I know what this actually is. This is actually the sequel to Magic Mike. Can you imagine? How desperate are you to be sexually attracted to a gorilla? I don't know. It makes me kind of want to question my own wife because, man, since we've been together for a year now, it's our 1 year anniversary, I might as well tell you this. I kind of got a hairy back. It's there. I don't know what people can possibly see in a gorilla, but I know one thing. I think visual pareidolia is alive and well when it comes to the Mars Range Rovers. Eagle-eyed conspiracy theorists have identified what looks like a small pyramid on the Red Planet. A lot of strange things have been spotted in photographs taken by the Mars Rovers over the years, and this week, another anomalous object has been added to the list, a small stone pyramid. Discovered in images recorded by the Curiosity rover, the pint-sized structure is allegedly to be the top of a much larger pyramid that had become buried in the sand over thousands of years. Critics, however, have argued that the anomaly is far more likely to be a geological formation, as similar pyramid-shaped rocks carved by the wind had been found on Earth. Other objects seen previously in photographs of Mars have included coffins, traffic lights, a hamster, and even a rock that seemed to bear an uncanny resemblance to U.S. President Barack Obama. you see what I did there? Barack Obama. The vast majority of these images are as vague and elusive as those posted by UFO witnesses on Earth, and many have fairly mundane explanations, said author Nigel Watson. The problem is that the more NASA denies such things or explains them, the more people think there is a conspiracy to hide the truth that aliens are visiting our planet. As you know, finding these relics and supposed artifacts on a distant planet is just so exciting to all of us, but you know what? You gotta call visual pareidolia what it is. I mean, we do it all the time. We look in clouds and stuff like that, way up in the sky, and we say, hey, you know what? That kind of looks like Elvis. But guess what? Elvis isn't smiling down on you. It's just rain. Well, I guess it's what you'd probably call a myth, you know? And there's always misconceptions. Why don't we put both words together and call it a mythconception? Do you like that idea? I like that idea, too. You know what? There's plenty of other mythconceptions out there as well. I think I'm going to go ahead and read a couple of them. Mythconceptions. Common knowledge is frequently wrong. Here are some examples of things that many people believe, but that, according to our sources, just aren't true. Are you ready? Here it goes. A very, very cool thing to bring to the Odd Newfoundland Paranormal Podcast, myth conceptions. First one is, sushi is raw fish. Wrong. Technically, sushi isn't fish at all. The name of this Japanese dish refers to the vinegared rice, which often is topped with raw seafood, but many other foods can top the sushi too. Vegetables, eggs, or cooked meat of any variety, and it will still be called sushi. Another myth, ninja warriors dressed all in black. Now, that's how the ninja, assassins and spies who relied on stealth, were first depicted on stage in Japanese plays. The black costumes were merely a symbol of their invisibility. That same black-clad ninja image was then transferred to the movies. In reality, the ninja donned dark blue outfits at night to blend in with the color of the night sky. In the daytime, preferring to blend in with the crowd, ninja would wear anything from peasant rags to noble gowns, depending on their mission. So, there you go. Now, I happen to remember Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles, man, and they were green, and the foot soldiers, you know, they were purple, so, my God, my whole childhood, it's been a lie. Here's another myth for you. As the old saying goes, beer before liquor, never sicker. Liquor before beer, you're in the clear. Here's the fact, folks. There is no scientific fact and no scientific basis to this aphorism. Besides, it's not the order in which you drink the alcohol beverages that makes you sick. It's the actual amount of alcohol consumed. Yeah, I can see that for sure. Okay, Oh, here's another one of my favorite ones, because, you know, we all love peeing on each other. Urinating on a jellyfish sting will ease the pain, is the myth. And then here's the fact. While experts agree that running salt water over a sting is better than fresh water, which will actually make it hurt more, by the way, just because urine contains salt doesn't mean it helps. Why not? The concentration isn't nearly high enough. The best cure, time. The pain from the sting will subside in about 24 hours. Long enough for you to binge watch maybe pretty much the whole thing. Oh yeah, of Orange is the New Black. Love that show. Okay, and here's the last myth undecided. I'm just going to destroy here. The myth is goldfish only have a memory span of a few seconds. Now, my little girl, Faith, she actually got two goldfish yesterday. Oh my God. And their names are escaping me right now. One's a black goldfish, so I don't really think it's a goldfish. I think she called it Emily. And the other one is kind of cool looking too, but I can't remember its name for the life of me. I'll have to get back to you with that one next show. Here's the myth. Goldfish only have a memory span of a few seconds. Well, honestly, it just ain't true. A recent study from Plymouth University in which goldfish were forced to press a lever for food showed that they not only have memory spans of up to 3 months, they also have built-in biological clocks that allow them to line up for food each day just before feeding time. Conclusion? Fish are smarter than we think. You know, I always hate to have to think about animals and stuff like that that we eat as more intelligent than us, you know. And I'm kind of glad goldfish are about 3 months smart because, yeah, it's cool. They're not too genius. So when I flush them down the toilet, I don't feel too bad. Now, I wonder what would happen if you flushed the wrong kind of creature down the toilet. Well, I tell you, there's actually a mystery surrounding a bizarre sea creature. Now, this thing is it's supposed to be 508 million-year-old spiky sea creature, okay? This creature was so strange that scientists decided to name it Hallucinogenia. You know, as in hallucinogen, or hallucinate. It's so freakish, it's so strange, they had to name it something weird. Now, it was discovered back in the 1970s at the Burgess State Shale Site in the Canadian Rocky Mountains. This peculiar worm-like creature has remained something of a mystery for years. Measuring only 2 inches in length, its unusual features, including 7 pairs of nail-like spikes on its back and 3 pairs of skinny tentacles near its head, have seen it regarded as a bit of an oddity. Now, however, thanks to a new in-depth examination of its fossil remains, scientists have finally been able to get a more complete picture. It is nice to finally know rather fundamental things, such as how many legs it has, and to know its head from its tail, said paleontologist Martin Smith from the University of Cambridge. Hallucinogenia is thought to have hailed from the Cambrian period around 500 million years ago, a particularly significant time in history when most of the major groups of animals first appeared. It possessed a small mouth cavity and a throat line with a tiny needle-like teeth that were designed to grip food and hasten its passage to the stomach. It also had a strange hose-like neck with 2 bean-shaped eyes on top of its head. It would have been quite a sight, said paleontologist John Bernard Caron. I'm telling you, I'm looking at pictures of this thing, and it doesn't even look like it could possibly be a creature. It looks like a car part or something. Oh, man, oh, man. We got love-struck Japanese women swooning over gorillas. We got weird creatures that look like car parts. Man, oh, man, we got myth conceptions. I love cracking them all, especially about goldfish, you know, because they're a lot smarter than you think. Oh, man. All these stories, for a whole year, man, have been odd to Newfoundland.
The Odd to Newfoundland Paranormal podcast does not accept donations. In lieu of this, the Stella Burry Foundation is a registered charity established in 2005 to secure financial support for the work of Stella's Circle. Learn more and please give generously at stellaburry.ca. And now, back to the show.
And welcome back to the Odd to Newfoundland Paranormal podcast. I am joined tonight by the author of 2 books, Dancing on a Stamp, as well as Dancing Forever with Spirit. He, of course, has a very interesting story, one that is full of bright and light, and I love it, and I think it's very important that people hear his message. And the reason why is because, well, this is the anniversary show, and I'm thinking this guy's about as close as I can get to having fireworks on my show to celebrate my 1 year anniversary. Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to the podcast, Mr. Garnet Schulhauser, sir. How are you today?
Good, thanks, Johnny. How are you?
I am awesome, and I'm so glad to have you on. I genuinely do appreciate it, man. And, you know, I don't want to give away too much of your story because it's just so positive and good. So I'm just going to lead it in with one big question. I think everyone's dying to know. Garnet, who's Albert?
Albert is my spirit guide, and I first met him. I'll just tell you briefly how I met him. I was still practicing law in Calgary back then in 2007. I was walking down the street one afternoon, and all of a sudden this homeless man just sort of jumps out of nowhere, stands right in front of me, and stops me in my tracks. He was he looked like a typical homeless man, except he had these amazing, dazzling, sparkling blue eyes that were penetrating deep within my soul and also sending a wave of pure unconditional love at the same time.
Wow.
That was filling my body with an amazing sense of peace and security. So I just sort of stood there like a deer caught in the headlights. And then eventually he said, "Why are you here?" And he quickly disappeared into a store. I went in to look for him, couldn't find him. Next day I came back to that same street, walked up and down. And finally, I spotted this homeless man sitting alone on a bench. And I went up to him and I said, "You know, who are you and why did you stop me?" And he said, "I'm a soul just like you. I'm here to answer your questions and help you on your journey." And so that began a series of conversations I had with him over the next several months. I found out he was actually one of my spirit guides in disguise, and his name was Albert, and that I was the only one who could actually see him in the physical form. Nobody else would have seen him sitting on the bench there at all. And he appeared to me as a homeless man for the first three occasions. Then after that, he was just a voice in my head, and we communicated by telepathy.
Garnet,
our dialogue went on for quite a while, and he answered all my questions and many more.
I got one for you. You know, Garnet, why did he choose the alias of a homeless man? You know, I could think of 1,000 people that he could have appeared to you as, such as, I don't know, a judge, attorney, another attorney at law, anybody else. Why do you think he chose a homeless man to, so we say, kind of make contact with you at first?
I think he just wanted to startle me a bit. I mean, I think because for me, like most of the time when I saw homeless people, I just sort of go around them. And I think he wanted to startle me, number one. Secondly, he wanted me to realize that people aren't exactly always what they appear to be, and that there's sometimes something more deep within people other than their appearance. And I think he wanted to hit home to me with that point. The main reason he appeared in a physical form, he told me, was to ease me into the conversation, because if he had just started talking to me as a voice in my head, I likely would have thought I was going crazy.
Of course.
So he appeared to me in physical form, and then after the first three times, he just spoke to me, and I recognized his voice, and I was comfortable talking to him, and I knew I wasn't schizophrenic, and so that's how he sort of eased me into the whole conversation. But he never really did tell me why he appeared as a homeless man. You're right, he could have appeared as anyone. Maybe he just had a weird sense of humor. I don't know.
could have been. You know, it's interesting, too. When I think of lawyers, I think of people who aren't exactly, how should we say, hard up for a dollar. Good lawyers, anyway. And when I think of having my path crossed by a homeless man, indeed it would pique your interest and your attention right away. Definitely, because it's so out of the ordinary, you know what I mean?
Yeah, exactly.
That's interesting.
Probably why he did it.
Cool, man. So how many occasions did you meet this guy? Like, he just came up to you right outside of your place of work, or did he meet you at home or something?
This was just on the street, just not in front of our office building. That was the first occasion. Second occasion, I went back to that street to find him when I started the conversation. Third time was in my backyard. I was on a Saturday afternoon. I just looked out one afternoon, and there he was sitting on a chair. So that was the third physical time. And then after that, he would just be whenever I would sort of sit and meditate for a couple of minutes, and I'd say, "Okay, Albert, are you there?" And then he'd just speak to me by telepathy. Hmm. So how many times I've lost count. It went on off and on over a period of several months. What he told me early on was that I had to write a book about what he was revealing to me so that everyone else could hear his message. And so that resulted in my first book, Dancing on a Stamp.
Nice. And, you know, it's interesting too, when you mentioned that he already had a purpose before he came across you. Like, he already had a plan in motion. He was setting you on that course. What do you think was probably the main reason to be on that course? Like, when I think of people in my life who've been my guiding light towards the things I love and hold dear, I think of all those little astrological, shall we say, nudges I've received, those gut feelings, those senses. Where does he really fall Garnet kind of thing. Where does he really fall with you? Did he make himself
my spirit guide? And you're right. Typically, spirit guides don't communicate so directly, Johnny.
Yeah.
As you say, they often are flashes of intuition, gut feelings, whispers, so on. And that's the general norm. He came to me directly and spoke very clearly in a telepathic sense because he wanted me to be able to clearly understand him and write a book about his revelation. So I was chosen as one of his channels to hear a sort of a more direct message. And so that's why he came to me in that fashion. He clearly had an intention in mind was for me to write a book, actually several books. He told me after I got going on the first book that I'd be writing 4 or 5 books, which is quite a surprise to me. My second one has been published. My third one is in the process of being published, and they're all about Albert. And so
wow.
He started coming to me and showing me new things. And in my second book, he took me on some second and third books, he took me on some astral adventures where he showed me, you know, the things in the spirit side, introduced me to souls who'd already crossed over, different planets in the universe. It's a very interesting civilization. So his purpose was clearly to show me things that he wanted me to write about. So I just followed along and marched to his tune.
Of course. And you know, with me, like right away, I'm like, wow. Now I know Garnet Schulhauser. I have so many questions about all the weird stuff that are happening in my life that maybe you can relate to a little tiny bit. You know, the first thing we talk about right off the hop is that gut feeling, that intuition, that strange feeling that you must do something, even if it sounds strange, like there's no reason to do it. We get that intuition. Do you feel like that's always maybe mine and everybody else's spirit guy saying, yeah, go for it for a certain reason?
Absolutely. When you get those feelings, Johnny, it may seem to sort of come out of nowhere, and they may seem strange to you, but clearly your guides are telling you this is what you should do. And all too often people ignore them, or they're too busy, they don't even hear the message. But when you get those, Johnny, you should act on it because it's your guides telling you this is the road you should take. And it's really important to follow that. Otherwise, you can just sort of stray off course and wander around and not follow the path you'd intended for yourself.
Well, I tell you what, this is an interesting one just between me and you. You actually came into my life yourself. You're one of the few people out there who actually contacted me to be on my show. Usually I'm asking people to be on mine. Is this just the way it is? Because I'm new to this. It's only one year, so to speak. But I actually found you. Your email went right to my trash, and I had a feeling I should check my trash today. I've never done that, ever. I have like a bajillion junk emails. I'm like, I want to check that, see what's in it. And I seen your name came up. So I was like, wow. And then I contacted you. So I trusted my gut feeling. Garnet, you think I did the right thing?
Oh, absolutely. And there's no doubt in my mind that the reason you checked your trash was because you were getting guidance to do so.
Yeah.
So it was meant to be. So here we are.
It's very refreshing. And I find that very comforting, Garnet. And I think that's one of the most important things you could ever do, no matter what realm of the paranormal we're in to give comfort. I believe that is really, really important. And, you know, my own research has gone into a very spiritual thing now where people want me to come and talk privately with them. And I just feel that connection is so very important. But you got to ask the basic questions. I am still a paranormal investigator, and I've just got some burning questions I got to ask. You mentioned earlier that he had these piercing blue eyes, hey?
Yes.
So was it the eyes that really caught your attention right away?
Yeah, absolutely, because otherwise he just looked like a typical homeless man, like stringy hair and scraggly beard and dirty clothes. So I would have gone around and accept that. I was riveted up to the spot by these amazing eyes. Like I'd never seen dazzling eyes like that before. And they were just, as I said, they were just sort of sending me this gush of warm, unconditional love that was just sort of infusing me with an amazing sense of peace and security. So it was very special. I knew he's a very special guy. He just wasn't your typical homeless man, and that's why I knew I had to go back and find him and start the conversation, because he was I knew he was very special. Didn't know exactly who he was or what he was there for, but I knew I had to find out.
Did you have any physical interaction with him? Like, I can't help but ask these analytical questions, but you know, I still got the paranormal investigator part of me burning ass. Did you actually lay a hand on this guy? Did he feel different, or was he just really like another guy?
Yeah, no, I didn't touch him. I didn't, you know, grab his hand and touch his shoulder, and he felt very solid, just like a normal person. So there was nothing unusual in that sense about him. Although he did say that I was the only one who could do that. If other people had been passing by, they wouldn't have seen him sitting on the bench with me. I would have been sitting there by myself to them. So I was the only one who could see him, but he felt very real to me.
Makes you wonder if your spirit guide is sitting with you right now. I might have one or two or maybe even three with me right here in the room, eh?
Well, they're always there for you, Johnny, and they don't always show themselves, but I'm certain that they are there with you right now.
Eh, there's a few times I think I caught them out of the corner of my eye, usually during life-changing events. And, you know, I could think of many stories, but I'm going to continue on with yours. Tell me a little tiny bit about what you learned as Albert's student. I mean, I could think of a thousand questions to ask you, but my first one really is, did he tell you your purpose?
No, he didn't tell me my purpose. And what he said was, you know, early on, I asked him a lot of personal questions like that you might ask a psychic or a medium. And he said, look, I'm not going to help you on your personal journey other than in a very general sense. So don't ask me for, you know, which fork of the road to take when you come to one, because I'm not going to give you personal advice. He said, I'm going to have to listen to my guides and listen to their whispers and their flashes of intuition, just like everyone else, because that's part of my challenge, part of my journey. So he wouldn't give me specific advice. But he did, other than to say that I have to write books about his revelations, that's where he's very definite. And he did give me some guidance on what to put in it and how to stylize it. But he didn't write it for me, which would have been a lot easier for me. But he wouldn't give me specific advice. So in terms of my life purpose, yeah, what he said basically was, yeah, now that you're retired as a lawyer, your life purpose is to do what I tell you to do and write books about what I show you.
Mm-hmm.
So that was basically it.
And, you know, there's two things that pop in my mind right away when I read your bio, Garnet. The first thing is, you know, you were a lawyer. And, you know, I put lawyers right up there with scientists, the analytical mind, always having to weigh things from every single point of view, but usually having to follow a guideline, right? This must have been a real shakeup for you spiritually, hey?
Well, it certainly was. It was an amazing transformation because before you're right, I was a typical button-down, straight-laced, analytical lawyer. And then all of a sudden, Albert came along and it sort of changed my whole direction. It was sort of like, now I'm talking to my spirit guide. I was afraid to tell people about it, even my wife, because for fear they'd think I was going crazy. So I kept it to myself for the longest time, but then eventually sort of came out of the spiritual closet and published my book. But it was really a game changer for me. And since then, I sort of try to put behind me my lawyer brain and start communicating with my spiritual brain. And it's not easy at first, but it gets better as time goes on. So it was a bit of a struggle at first, for sure.
Mm-hmm. And, you know, my own personal struggle spiritually, I mean, I've read a book about mine. And it's very interesting that the power of healing has always been a factor out there as well. And my father's story is just a really wild one. And I told the story actually in the first ever podcast a year ago, but I'll sum it up really quick for you. Dad has terminal cancer. Dad is still alive. It's been only 5 years now in August. Actually six, apparently. And he is just a grand example of mind over matter, so to speak. But Dad has a very strong faith. He has a very strong faith in the Lord. And this is just, it's done miracles for him to the point where the doctors are scratching their heads saying, how is this man alive? And I think about myself as an atheist turned paranormal investigator through all of those changes brought on by Dad's sickness and whatnot. What other people have you kind of inspired along the way? I'm sure you've changed a few lives too, hey?
Yeah, I hope that I have. I haven't heard any sort of direct stories, but I have a lot of people say that they've inspired, that, you know, they hit a rough spot in life, read my books, and they were inspired to carry on, and things have really turned around for them. You know, so I know that I have, Albert and I have helped other people, which is really our intention, certainly Albert's intention. But you know, when you speak of your father, it was one of the surprising revelations that Albert said to me was that no one on earth dies by accident. So that everyone dies when their soul is ready to leave the incarnation. So mm-hmm. When I'm thinking about your dad, you know, why is he hanging on when medical science says he shouldn't be? It's because his soul wasn't ready to leave.
No, he still has way too many hearts.
What happened.
He has way too many hearts to touch yet, hey?
Yeah, I mean, he decided he had reasons to hang around and he's carrying on because, and you won't maybe not know what those reasons are, but eventually you'll find out, but there's good reason for it. And if his soul had wanted to leave, it would have been gone a long time ago.
That's right. And, you know, that's another thing, too. I always try to wrap my brain around the big questions. And I can't help but feel like I may have somebody on the line here who might be able to answer some of them. One of the biggest things that has always interested me was the idea of our demise. And I use demise with quotation marks. I don't believe that we disappear. I do not believe that the world goes black when we do crossover or pass away, whatever you want to call it. I will say this, though. I'm sure your spirit guide probably gave you a little bit of insight into your final moments, or should I say the beginning of your real ones. Why don't you talk to us a little bit about crossing over and Albert's journey with you?
Yeah, well, that was one of the questions I had. Of course, he said we're all eternal souls and we live forever. And when our physical bodies die, we cross over to the spirit side. So that was fine. I was concerned then about the actual dying process, you know, the actual, you know, would I feel pain, discomfort? Would I be anxious about what was happening? He said, no. He said that when your soul is ready to leave, you'll actually exit your body, your physical body, before the final moment. So that, for example, if you were in a car crash and you died from injuries in a car crash, your soul would actually leave your body before the collision occurred, and you'd be sort of watching it like you're from a third person perspective, like you're watching a movie. So you wouldn't feel anything. You just sort of watch it, and then, you know, you'd be already out of your body, and then you go and cross over. So he said the passing over process is very pleasant. It doesn't hurt. You're not anxious, and your spirit guides are always there to sort of grab you by the hand and say, come on, let's go home. So it's not something to be feared. It's just sort of a passing through from one doorway into another. And it doesn't hurt, and it won't cause you any anxiety or any horrible implications in terms of, am I going to suffer pain from my injuries? Am I going to writhe around on the ground for hours before I finally leave? And that sort of thing doesn't happen.
Interesting. Another thing too, you know, you mentioned a little bit earlier that you have different soul groups. I think is what you mentioned, hey? And these groups are all over the galaxy. Tell me a little tiny bit about that. You know, you mentioned extraterrestrial, I guess we could say, for lack of better words, of different races of people or beings, we'll say, who are in different parts of the world. Tell me a little tiny bit about that. That's really interesting stuff to me.
Well, he said that humans, a lot of humans tend to think that we're the only intelligent life, or maybe, you know, in the universe, and there's only life on our planet. It's because our scientists have to sort of have positive proof that there's something else out there that's alive. Albert says there's millions and millions of different life forms in our galaxy, in our universe, and some of them are less advanced than we are. A lot are way more advanced, and they can actually travel between star systems. And he says that a number of them have been visiting Earth for, you know, since the day one when life first began, monitoring life, watching what we're doing, helping us where we can. And one of the things that we could do is that when we cross over to the spirit side, we don't have to incarnate again as a human on Earth. We can actually incarnate into one of these other races on the dense planes. We can choose whatever we want. And so some of us may already have incarnated into a being on a different planet before we came to Earth. And some of us will go there after we finish our earthly incarnations. So sort of like a huge spectrum of opportunities available for souls, you know, on Earth and elsewhere in the galaxy.
That's really interesting, too, because, you know, we once again bring up science, and it's funny. I made the joke on my last show, and I got a lot of flack for it, but I think I'll crack it again right here. There is no bigger faith on the planet than science. There really isn't. There is no bigger faith. We cannot recreate life in a lab for a reason. Okay, we cannot take inanimate matter and make it come to life. We cannot do that. We are not missing one ancestor on the skeletal systems, okay, in anthropology. We are missing thousands of humanoid skeletons. We have no idea how we got here, what drove us. So it must be very comforting to know that there's a fellow out there like Albert who can always help you out. You know, now I'm really curious. I want to talk to my spirit guide so bad. I don't even know if I got one. Well, to be honest with you, I'm pretty sure I do. But I have no idea. Is there any way to communicate?
Well, first of all, you do have a spirit. In fact, everyone has at least two or three. Some have four or five. I talked to one lady who had 11 spirit guides.
Wow.
It varies. And they actually change over time as your life progresses. Some of them will leave and then new people will come in. But there's always somebody there. How do you communicate? The best way is to just quiet your mind through meditation, Johnny. And if you can get rid of all the other clutter in your mind, eventually their thoughts and their messages will come through in a louder and clearer fashion and in a more frequent fashion. And you'll be able to hear more of their messages and you'll have a, you know, you'll have a better discourse, a better means of communication. They typically don't come and talk to you directly like the way Albert talks to me, but if you are patient, you will be able to hear more and more of their intuitive flashes and the whispers they give you in your mind, and that's what you really have to shoot for.
And that's awesome, because to me, like, maybe that's where I need to head to next on my spiritual journey, you know what I mean? I always look at myself as an infant no matter what I do, because there's always a next step, the next evolution, the next section, we'll say, of the grand story that is me. So, tell me a little tiny bit about your opinion on some of the things in the paranormal field. You know, I guess this is a question you probably don't get very often, but somebody who's had such a brush with, well, really a higher being, for lack of a better word, for Albert, I would call him a higher being, I'm sure you probably agree. Tell me your thoughts on spirit communication.
Oh, no, it does happen. In fact, Albert, I asked him that question, and I described it a bit in my first book. He says, yes, some people have a special talent for having more direct communication with people on the spirit realm. And these are some, you know, they're known as psychics, as mediums, and so on. And he says that they just have a very special talent that a lot of people don't have. And they can actually, so when they say they're communicating with somebody from the spirit realm, they are. They are communicating with, you know, for mediums, they will connect you with your past loved ones. So that they, and these passed over people are very anxious to talk to you, to reassure you that they're alive and well. They may have died physically on Earth, but they're alive and well, and they're happy, and they're watching over you, and they'll be happy to see you again when you cross over. So these messages are genuine. You know, you have to be careful. Sometimes there are some phonies out there that aren't really getting the communication, but there are many, many, many who actually do contact spirits directly, or spirits contact them. And talk to the people that they're giving a reading for. So it's very real. And you know, Albert says all of us could learn to do this. We just have to, be able to use more of our brains and focus our thoughts better. And then eventually all of us can communicate with people in the spirit realm. But right now there's a few people through genetic deviations or whatever, that just naturally have the ability. They, in a lot of cases, they've had it since the time they were young children. And they've seen spirits and talked to spirits, and that just continued on, you know, throughout their life. So, yeah, it's very real.
Awesome. Another thing, too. Now, me, I love my thing I'm very passionate about, and something I've completely focused my entire research on, is electronic voice phenomena and all different aspects of it, not just recorders, but different types of equipment and things like that used for spirit communication. And one thing I've noticed in my own research is that I've never ever had a spirit come out and say, I'm a spirit, I'm your God, or I'm a ghost, there is a God. I've never ever had that happen. But it's not to disappoint me. It's actually made me realize there are rules on the other side. Could this possibly be correct as well, Garnett?
Yeah, Albert didn't really speak to that point at all, but I think that there probably is. I mean, there seems to be more or less rules in terms of how people on the spirit side deal with people on the earth plane. I mean, obviously it's not sort of an open field where every spirit can talk to every human continually on a regular basis and tell them what's going on. That's not intended. We were only intended here on the earth plane to have some very subtle guidance and not sort of direct open communication, because that would make it too easy for us. So there are, in fact, some rules about how they can communicate with us, and the intention that they can only communicate most of the time subtly, except if you're a psychic, is very intentional, so that our life on Earth would be very much of a challenge. Otherwise, it'd be too easy. I mean, if you had your spirit guide telling you every day, every step you should take, you know, every hour of every day, it wouldn't be much of a challenge anymore, would it?
That's right. And that's why I think my research is in the EVP, really. It just led me to more questions. But that passion for that, man, I get to do so many cool things and meet so many great people. So I love it. You know, I always think, too, if I had to link to someone like Albert, you know, I'd be very curious as to a lot of the bad things. Now, I don't want to go all negative on you either, Garnet, but there's so many bad things going on in the world a lot of the time. You know, how does he express himself when it came to, say, crime, which is probably big for you because you're the lawyer, but also like disease, things like that? Do they also have their purpose?
Yeah, they do. I mean, Earth is a really tough school. We're designed to be so. So we have very tough physical conditions. We have, you know, hurricanes and tornadoes and floods, and we have cold weather and hot weather and all kinds of things. So we have physical problems that we have to deal with. But the other thing is, in terms of bad things, humans doing bad things to one another, it's that we have free will when we're here on Earth, and we don't remember what we put in our life plan, what we intended to do. So a lot of times free will can run amok, and people can go way off course and do awful things, and it's just because they're not able to control their negative emotions. And we all have negative emotions, you know, fear, anger, hate, greed, and it's a real challenge for us to control it so that we don't lash out every time somebody crosses our path and does something we don't like. It's real effort for us to control our anger and control our fear, control our hate. And some people can do it reasonably well, others don't. And the ones who don't are the ones who commit sort of the horrendous crimes, the murderers and robbers and terrorists. And that's just part of life on Earth. It's how some people react to what goes on around them in their lives.
Yeah. And I think that's something I can learn to learn a whole lot from as well. There's a lot of changes going on in my life right now, and it's very hard to keep cool sometimes. And I just want to blow my top, but you know what? I'm always cool and calm and collected on the outside. Because you never know who might be around who could really use that smile on your face, hey?
Exactly. Yeah.
Tell me, you know, we're actually getting very close to the end of the interview here. Tell me a little tiny bit about what you're going to do next. And that's something I love to hear from people because it's always interesting. Tell me about maybe an upcoming event convention, or tell me a little tiny bit about maybe another book you might be writing.
Well, I just I finished my third book a while back. My second book has been published, Dancing Forever with Spirit. Third book will be published, released in early 2016. And it's more, the second two books are about my astral adventures with Albert. So they describe different things in my meeting with different people. Yes, I am going to write a fourth book. Albert tells me a fourth and at least a fifth. And I'm just waiting for Albert to give me my marching orders on what should go into book four. I expect that'll come sometime in the next couple of months and I'll be off writing my fourth book. In terms of what's upcoming in my schedule, in July 17th to 19th, I'll be one of the speakers at the Ozark Mountain Transformation Conference held in Springdale, Arkansas. Mm-hmm. And I'll be, so it's like a 3-day convention, and I'll be one of the speakers there. So if anybody's in the neighborhood, please pop in. Or if you can't make it, you can always buy a DVD from the Ozark Mountain website after the event.
Awesome. Good to see that you're out there. You're very visible. If anybody wants to contact you, you do have a website, of course, which is www.garnetschulhauser.com. Don't forget, folks, on the Odd the Newfoundland Paranormal Podcast, we always promote our authors. Pick up a copy of Dancing on a Stamp. Pick up a copy of Dancing Forever with Spirit. Get to know Albert yourself and my wonderful guest, Garnet Schulhauser. Sir, thank you so very much for being on my podcast. You've just been a ray of light. Happy anniversary to me. Happy Canada Day to you, because it's going to be Canada Day when this episode drops. You have yourself a great day.
Thank you, Johnny.
Well, the time to say goodbye is upon us. But don't worry, you can keep track of the Odd the Newfoundland Paranormal Podcast very easily. It's available on Stitcher, iTunes, Podbean, and TuneIn Radio. Just look for the Odd the Newfoundland Paranormal Podcast banner. Of course, if you'd like to keep up to date, you can always check out the Odd the Newfoundland Paranormal Podcast Facebook page, drop a like, and every single time a new show goes up, you'll be notified. You can also follow me, John Mallard, on Twitter, at ODDTONFLD. That's Odd to Newfoundland. Get your latest news on the podcast as well as the ever-popular para-joke of the day. From the oldest city in North America, I bid you adieu from the Odd the Newfoundland Paranormal Podcast.